the latest edition of the By The Men MFC podcast. Tonight, regulars Jay and Bustad are in attendance. We were hoping to have Gary Murdoch on as well. He's unfortunately suffering from some connection issues. He'll be back on next week though. Guys, welcome along as always. How's things?
Aye, no bad.
I'm very good, thanks.
Good stuff. So we're going a day later than normal, a bit of a heavy weekend for the majority of us, I think. On Saturday, a 1-1 draw with Kilmarnock. Jay, I wasn't actually at the game on Saturday, just caught the highlights in the official website. Seems like a bit of an opportunity missed, given Kilmarnock reduced to 10 men.
I suppose so. I can understand that sort of the way of thinking. Particularly the timing. You know, they go down to 10 men just before half time. We get the equaliser, and you're looking for a bit of momentum to then go on and really take the game to them. And we could have nicked it later on. I think we had the better chances. But, you know, I think because we went into the game bottom of the league, I think we need to be positive and just look at any point at the moment as a point gained rather than 2 points dropped. You know, it was quite a flat game. I thought it was everything about the game seemed really flat. It had a kind of mid-table, nothing to play for kind of feel about it, which was strange. And I don't mean just on the park, I mean off the park. Where we normally stand up the back behind the Motherwell boys, that whole section was absolutely rammed. And yet, the atmosphere was really, really quiet. There wasn't a lot of singing. I don't know if that was in response to the game itself, but the atmosphere was really flat. The game was flat. Obviously, the pitch was absolutely terrible. So the game itself wasn't great. But overall, I think to get a point against a team who are, you know, mid-table, they've been doing better than us the majority of the season. They've had a great reaction under Gary Locke. So although they played for 45 minutes down to 10 men, I'm quite content. Particularly having beaten Inverness Cali Thistle the week before, I think if you'd offered any of us to take 4 points from those two games, considering the absolute dross we did to sit through for 8 games in a row before that, I think pretty much every Motherwell fan on the planet would have taken it.
Basta, I know you said last week that the highlights don't always tell a story of a game. It did show a lot of chances for our guys. What does concern me is still only 21 goals we've scored this season. It's a very poor return given we've played 28 games. To stay up, we need to start finding our scoring touch.
Yep, I agree with that. There's definitely no doubt that we need to start scoring goals. I think that in the last two games we've probably created more chances than we have all season. So, you know, we're starting to go about it the right way, but as you says, we're maybe needing to start putting the ball in the net. There was one or two opportunities on Saturday that, you know, we probably should have burst the net. I watched the highlights again there just before we started here, and you know, one or two of the chances were a bit clearer than I thought they were at the game. Obviously, maybe being at the other side of the park, or, you know, other side of the stadium. Sorry, but as you say, we need to start scoring goals, basically.
That being said, though, Busta, nice to see Scott McDonald open his account in his second spell at the club. You'd imagine, given he seems like a very confident guy anyway, but that'll only enhance his confidence, and that can only be a good thing.
Definitely. When he was standing over the ball, you know, I think it might have been Jay. I didn't know Scott McDonald could take free kicks. You know, Conor Grant was there, and you know, we'd seen what he'd done already. He's no shy of a shot, so I thought it maybe be, you know, him that was having a dig. But, you know, as I say, right before half time, we get the goal, they got a man sent off. It's always good to get a goal before half time, but I think maybe with the sending off being right on half time, it gave them a chance to maybe reorganise, you know, during that 15-minute break. But they came back out, sat in sort of two lines of four, and you know, tried to hit us on the break, so we didn't really manage to break them down, unfortunately.
There's an incident that I would like to talk about, and that's the booking for Marvin Johnson after the goalkeeper, Craig Sampson, clearly took him down inside the box. Referee John Beaton gave Johnson a yellow card for simulation. That's been proven to be the wrong decision. I don't want to focus on as much the incident as kind of How many times do referees need to get these big decisions wrong before we perhaps look at the introduction of television replays, given how decisive decisions like that could be proven to be come the end of the season, Jay?
Yeah, I think the thing that annoys me is the fact that when Johnson does get wiped out, I suppose, you know, I don't know the actual letter of the law, but I suppose there's a small argument that you could say that he's taking the ball out of play, or, you know, he's not in control of the ball. But there does seem to be this culture with referees, and I don't know whether it's because of not, a lot of them haven't played the game or something along those lines, but there seems to be this kind of culture with referees where it's either a dive or a penalty. Now, obviously, I think we're all agreed that almost certainly was a penalty, but there's almost that idea that because, you know, at first I thought, right, if he's not given the penalty, then it's because he's ran the ball out of play. But there does seem to be this idea that it has to be one or the other, which is quite annoying. But yeah, it should have been. But, you know, again, these decisions, it's that old cliche about how they apparently all even out across the season. I don't know if they do in terms of penalties, but just when we're talking about teams down to 10 men, I think that when we went to St Mirren Park and got a win, I thought that we really struggled to break 10 man down. You know, obviously St Mirren went down to 10 men, and we, on that day, I don't think we played well, and I think we probably didn't deserve all 3 points, and yet we got them. So I'm not too downheartened about the point yesterday. But just also on Marvin Johnson, I thought he was, you know, over the last two games, I think he's been one of our better players. I think we're starting to piece together, you know, a few players who can actually create something on the park, who can create chances, who can score goals themselves. And I get the impression that if we had actually been playing, perhaps even at Rugby Park on the plastic surface, I know it gets a hard time, but I think we've got football players now. You know, Conor Grant can take a touch and pass it, Pearson, Johnson, McDonald, you know, these guys can create chances. So obviously it's purely hypothetical, but if we'd been playing against a 10-man Kilmarnock on a flat pitch, I would have been far more confident that we would have went on and, you know, scored another 2, possibly 3 goals. Unfortunately, the surface on Saturday was absolutely horrendous. I know that the ground staff and those at the club deserve a lot of plaudits for getting the game on, but it was an absolute bomb scare. The ball's bouncing about everywhere. I think even on the highlights, you see the ball just stopping in muddy piles. So, you know, I don't want to get too bogged down on red cards and penalty decisions. You know, even just to get a point against a side in what was essentially a swamp is a good result.
Yeah, I was actually speaking to a Kilmarnock supporter who was friends with the Killy kit man on Saturday, and he was saying that their kit man arrived at the ground at 11 o'clock and he had texted them saying there was absolutely no chance the game would go ahead. So it's possibly quite telling that Kilmarnock wouldn't have been very pleased about the eventual decision. You would think, though, that a lot of the reason behind that would be financial. You don't want to be playing a Wednesday or a Tuesday night against Kilmarnock, especially given that our results haven't been that good in recent weeks, in recent months actually, in fact the whole season, to summarise it. So I suppose it was good to see it, and a slight increase as well in the attendance from the Inverness game, which you would have hoped and expected as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's one of those double-edged swords. You know, it's the pitch is obviously flooded. I mean, I think the pitch against Inverness, it was really terrible. In front of us, I can remember two occasions. I think it was Lee Irwin on one occasion and Marvin Johnson, where they were running with the ball and then tried to cross it in and just put it straight into the south stand because the ball just took a horrendous bounce in front of them. So it's not a surface you can play good football on. So it's that kind of double-edged sword. It's all very well spending hours getting the pitch, you know, playable in inverted commas, but then, you know, you're not going to get a good game of football, which is fine if we, you know, we've not been playing great football, but it does mean that when you've got players in the park who, in normal circumstances, could maybe go on and pick off a team down to 10 men, like Kilmarnock were that whole second half, I don't think it's too surprising that it becomes a bit of a shambles, you know, the ball's bobbling about. So, you know, that's why I'm not too harsh. But, you know, again, credit to them for getting the game on, but it didn't really lend itself well to a good game of football.
Let's move on and we'll talk about our next game, which is Aberdeen, a trip to Pittodrie on a Friday night. We've already discussed ins and outs of having to go up there for the second time on a Friday evening. We can, well, is happening anyway, so we can't really do very much about it as it stands. Jay, it's a very, very difficult fixture against a side that will still have aspirations to challenge Celtic right to the bitter end in the championship race at the right end of the table.
Well, I mean, it's one of those games where I don't think we would really have expected to take anything out of it, but it's a good position to be in. It's a far better position to be in than I think we would have thought we would have been a few weeks ago. I think if the last 2 weeks hadn't happened and we hadn't looked, you know, better, both in terms of performance levels and motivation and desire and work ethic, if we hadn't picked up those 4 points, then it would be a bleak trip up to Pittodrie. But I think we can go up there a little bit, you know, perhaps not confident, but we can go up with a bit of optimism, a bit of hope. You know, we do, as I said, we do have players in our team now who can create things, who can create chances. You know, Buster said there that we've probably created more chances in our last two games than we have, like, almost the entire season up until now. So, you know, if we can keep that going, there's no reason why, you know, a little bit of luck, we can't at least, you know, sneak a point or at least have a good performance. I think that's what we've got to be looking at between now and the end of the season. I think if we're playing teams that we don't expect to beat, we should at least be looking for performance levels to be high and, you know, the players to show that they want to stay up, because obviously that's been missing up until now. So if we go there and we put the effort in and there's a bit of motivation, a bit of dedication, then regardless of the result, I'll be quite happy.
What's that? A record of Pittodrie's is actually very good. The 1-0 defeat earlier on in the season was one of the first in many years. It's hard to be overly optimistic, but for some reason I do believe that we've got a wee sneaky chance of getting something from the game.
I think we with this league in general, there's always a chance of MD beating MD, barring you know, the usual sort of Celtic and the past Rangers. You know, everybody else is always the chance of beating everybody else. This year, up until maybe two or three games ago, you know, I would have said we'd have no chance. But, you know, the performances, and Jay said it as well, you know, it's not even maybe even about a win if we get beat, fair dues, but as long as we put in another good performance, you know, there is a wee chance we can maybe sneak something. But it's going to be more about the fact that we have to keep the sort of the performance levels up. If we go up there, you know, we get beaten narrowly, fair enough, as long as we play reasonably well and maybe again keep creating chances, fair enough. But as you says, our record against Aberdeen in general was great up until maybe last year or whatever it was. I don't think they'd beat us for like 6 years or something. But it's, you know, we're on different ends of the scale here this time, so if we manage to get anything out of the game, I think everybody will be delighted.
I saw someone on Twitter mention that Motherwell were 12-1 to win on Friday night. I mean, it says that many will be lumping it on, but I don't think any team out with Celtic should be 12-1 to beat anybody else in the Scottish Premiership. I think it'll be a lot tighter than some expect, that's for sure.
Definitely. I mean, 12-1's massive. And maybe quite rightly so, depending on how you look at it, because the gap between us and Aberdeen is massive as well. But as I say, you know, the last few games we've picked up a wee bit. You know, as Jay said earlier as well, coming up against Kilmarnock and Inverness, if you'd tell me that we would get 4 points, you'd have been delighted. For me to sit here and be quite upset that we didn't manage to get six is quite something. So, you know, as you say, 12-1's massive, but I don't see too many people throwing their wages at it, to be honest with you.
that and the fact that we've lost the last five away and only got 7 points all season on our travels, but I still a wee bit of hope. Jay, the fact that Ian Barraclough's got a few selection headaches in terms of guys coming back from injury, obviously bolstered the side with a lot of new signings as well. That's a positive thing. That keeps people on their toes, and it'll certainly, if there's people that don't want to be at the club, then they'll be quickly found out, given that there's others that are absolutely chapping at the bit to get a game.
Definitely. I think we need to acknowledge that, like, 2 weeks ago, I think we were all on the verge of of doing something drastic. It was the most negative podcast of all time, but I think we've got to accept that we're in a far, far better position now, and that's a perfect example. I mean, you watch some of the highlights. Maybe I don't know how the under-20s game finished tonight, as I was away playing sevens.
Yeah,
they finished 3-2. But the game against Kilmarnock, was that 4-0 we finished? 5-0 last week?
I think it was 4. Aye.
4. And I watched the highlights for that, so I should know the score. But you know, guys like Nathan Thomas and Dom Thomas both played, and they looked absolutely brilliant. And, you know, these are guys who, you know, are chapping on the door of the first team. You know, a lot of people would argue that Dom Thomas should be starting games, and Nathan Thomas presumably has been signed as a first team player. So we are in a far better position now. We have guys on the bench. I mean, it's such a novelty. The last couple of games we've been able to go to a game and you're looking at your substitute bench and you're thinking, right, well, if things aren't going to plan, then we can change it. We do have guys who can come on. Now, I know John Sutton hasn't scored a lot of goals this season, but you've got a guy sitting in the bench there who's scored tons of goals for Motherwell, and that's a really good position to be in now. So I think we're kind of, it's taken a long time. I think we've, I mean, I'm still not convinced by Barraclough, not yet, but we've been quite hard on him a couple of weeks ago. I said that my worry was that he was brought in for a long-term vision that he had, and I think that's backed up with all the things that the club are doing off the park. I think Barraclough is almost, rather than being the most important part, you know, normally a manager getting appointed is a massive deal. I get the impression that it was more of Barraclough's like a cog in this big long-term vision. And my worry was that he wasn't going to be able to adapt in the short term to keep us up. I think he's finally starting to get there. I think that, well, it's taken a while. It's certainly not had the effect that somebody like Gary Locke has had at Kilmarnock. But, you know, we're now in far better shape. We're playing better football. We look more determined. The work ethic's there. His signings, for the most part, I think, have started to settle in and have then started to play well. And we do now have players who can get a game and who can come on and change the game. And you look at a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about you were going to watch Motherwell and there was 11 players in the park for the most part who just didn't care, who just didn't seem to be interested. Some more than others, obviously, but there was that lack of motivation, that lack of determination, lack of confidence, call it what you will. But we're now in a position where if anybody does that, then you don't expect to see them the next week. So we're in a far better position to be in. And you're right, you now go into games and there is that sort of excitement again, or anticipation of who has been doing well enough in training to get in the team, who deserves a place in the team, rather than who is just the 11 that seems to be accepted every week. So it's a good position to be in. And yeah, as I said, we're like the two Thomases chapping the door as well. We've got options, and that's something we've not really had this season.
Basta, a positive for me at the weekend was, I now think it's went from a three-horse race at the bottom to four, kind of dragged into the mix. Obviously, you will have the playoff, but it looked very much between three for the automatic relegation. I would say that's now changed with Ross County being in such a fantastic run of results, and Partick Thistle seem to be struggling a great deal as well. There's only 6 points between ourselves and Thistle. That's another positive. We don't really want to really celebrate other clubs' demises, but really we'll take all the help we can get at this moment in time.
No, it's all about, you know, survival yourself, I suppose. They'll be, the other teams will be looking at us, for example, a man up against Kilmarnock, only managing a draw. So, you know, they'll be looking at that and saying, you know, it's good that Motherwell didn't manage to get a win. I've got a sneaky feeling that Ross County are going to pull away, to be honest with you. I don't know why it is. I can't even remember who it was they've got in the next few weeks, but I was looking at the fixtures and I thought to myself, I can see Ross County maybe, you know, pulling away here. I think, to be honest with you, Partick Thistle might end up heavily involved, but I can see Ross County pulling away a bit.
They've got Aki's away on Saturday, who have really been in free fall since Alex Neil left, and then Kilmarnock at home the following week. So they have got, I think, kind of like ourselves, with the exception of the Aberdeen game on Friday night, we've got quite favourable fixtures in the run-in as well. That's Thistle, we've got St Johnstone at home. That'll be a tough one, given, well, St Johnstone's last game they beat They beat Celtic at Parkhead.
Just on what Buster was saying there, that was actually, I was pretty much going to say the exact same thing. I think if we continue, you know, the slow progress we're making, we continue to play good football, then I think you're possibly looking at Partick Thistle and St Mirren as the bottom two places. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves and say that's us out of it. But a couple of weeks ago, I think I was just driving to Five Asides or whatever, and I was listening to the Super Scoreboard or whatever it is, the phone in they have, you know, just listening to remind myself how good the podcast is compared to all that rubbish. And there was somebody had phoned, it was a Partick Thistle fan. You know, lo and behold, after about like 100 Rangers and Celtic fans, a Partick Thistle fan was allowed on. And he basically said that they were in free fall. This was a couple of weeks ago. He said that any Partick Thistle fan who's currently going to the games can see that we're not just, you know, we're not just out of form or playing badly. The word they used was free fall. So it seems as though the Thistle fans think that they're in a serious danger. And I think Ross County seem to have just clicked for them. Don't know whether it's another case of, you know, they seem to do this every season where they get to the January transfer window, bring a couple of good signings in and suddenly pull away again. But I think that, you know, you're looking at Ross County kind of hitting form at the right time, Partick Thistle falling away at, I suppose, the wrong time for them. So I agree completely with Buster. I reckon you could see Ross County and Partick Thistle effectively swapping places in the next few weeks. And again, if we do our job and we win our games, then I reckon Thistle are in deep trouble, and I reckon St Mirren could be going down with them.
I think we've kind of played a wee bit of part in County's revival as well. That 3-2 defeat up there a few weeks ago, that was the catalyst for them going on and winning their next two or three games in the bounds. So you do kind of look at it with a wee bit of what if we went up there and got the result that we so desired, it could have all went so different. But as it happened, we lost that game, then followed it up with a disappointing performance against Dundee as well. So, but as I said, I think you're both right. It seems like we are beginning to find a wee bit of form, a bit of confidence. Whereas momentum's such a huge thing in the at either end of the table, and Thistle seem to have it that they can't stop losing games. So yeah, they're welcome down at the bottom, that's for sure. Anyone else except us can definitely take these last two places. That's fine by me.
Again, as I say, it's all about, you know, you say you don't really want to see other teams doing. Oh, you know what I mean. So I know what you meant. Sorry when you said that, because I couldn't care, to be honest with you, as long as it's not us. But
now I'm actually thinking about that. I don't really care if Partick Thistle get relegated either. Or, no, be any skin off my
nose. It's not even like that good an away day or anything like that. Get rid of them.
Right, that's it. So St Mirren and Partick Thistle, we'll catch yous later, guys. Stay up. See, actually, looking at the results tonight and having a wee glance at the championship table, I was thinking there's every chance that Rangers could actually miss out in these playoffs.
I still think they'll make the playoffs, but I think the chances of them facing the 11th place team in the Premiership, I don't see it happening. I just can't see them. Hibs over two legs will beat Rangers, and obviously they've struggled when they've played Queen of the South. So I think they'll probably just make the playoffs. But I think any Rangers fan that thinks that they're going to make it even to the playoff final, never mind, you know, get promoted, I think they're absolutely deluded. I just don't think Rangers are coming up this season at all, which is another reason why, you know, it's important for us to stay up, because I'm really enjoying being in divisions that don't involve Rangers.
As far as I'm aware, it's nothing but complete rumour, but I've read a few things about league reconstruction, you know, taking the league up to 16 teams or whatever. Whether or not it's a ploy to get Rangers back up or not, I don't really care, but I think league reconstruction is something that needs to be looked at as well. I enjoy the split, to be honest with you. And as far as I'm aware, the last time they were talking about adding another couple of teams or whatever, there was still going to be a split, which I think is pretty fair enough, because coming up to the split here, when, you know, we all have to play each other in the bottom, it's going to be exciting when it's us, Partick Thistle, Ross County, St Mirren. You know, it's going to be exciting. Then your fate's in your own hands against teams of, you know, a similar level at you. But I still think I would like to see the league reconstructed, and, you know, maybe 14, 16 teams, something like that. Whether or not you know, whether or not that ever happens is another thing, but it's one of the things I'd like to see in the future anyway.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been something that's been brought up as well by Celtic. Dundee United seem to be playing each other throughout the whole month of March. I think they'll have played 7 times by the time the season's over. They're getting too familiar with certain games and everything else. I always feel that we seem to play Kilmarnock so many times in the season. I don't know why that is. It just feels like such a familiar fixture. And it does need freshened up. It's been stale for quite some time, but I'm not
always
convinced in the powers that be in the Scottish game to mix it up to anything but to the benefit of the big two, so to speak. Well, I know Rangers certainly don't look like one of the big two just now, but I think it would almost be considered inevitable that if they came back up, they would eventually find their financial footing and take their place up the top end of the league.
There was also the point where we had the chance to get rid of the 11-2 voting system thing, and I think it was Aberdeen that screwed everybody else over.
Yeah, Aberdeen and Celtic.
Well, obviously Celtic. But you know, it was Aberdeen, I think, they sided with them in that occasion. And again, I think it was somebody on Steelman Online that suggested it was because they thought they were in a front runner position to finish second, you know, pick up the highest prize money, you know, whatever they thought themselves. And then I think they ended up in the bottom six the first season where, you know, Rangers weren't involved. So, you know, they screwed themselves there. But we seem to have played Aberdeen in every cup competition gone as well in the last couple of years, you know, once or twice in each one. But it's, as you say, it gets a bit boring to say when you're going to St Mirren for the fourth time, or you're seeing St Mirren for the fourth time, especially when it is somebody like St Mirren.
Seeing them once is bad enough.
I think that's it. You need to actually, there's so many ways, and I do think we tend to be at the forefront, the club, not me, you and us three.
But I'm there as well.
Well, that's what I was actually talking to you both, but I kind of mixed my words. go easy on me. Although I've been at the forefront of trying to be different with things and their approach to supporters and everything else, but the problem is when it's the same product and the kind of same teams and the same faces year after year, it's not going to attract many new punters. Or it badly needs freshened up, and I don't know whether the people in charge are even capable of thinking up a plan to take Scottish football to a different level. But I think from hearing guys like Andrew Wilson and Alan Burrows coming on, the club definitely have the right idea of how to change things about, but it's just whether those involved are willing to back it and to implement these changes for anything to actually change.
Well, when you mentioned Flo there, Burrows as well, you know, I mean, when he was on with ourselves, he mentioned at the time summer football, you know, he's a big advocate of that. Nobody really picked him up on it at the time, but then, you know, the other week there he was in one of the papers again, batting on about summer football. So he's well into summer football, but I'm not actually convinced that summer football is the answer either, to be fair. You know, don't get me wrong, it'd be very decent sitting Fir Park, July, sun beating down on you. After that, you go somewhere and sit in a beer garden, but I don't know if that's the answer for it, because it's all very good thing. It'll be fun sitting out in the good weather, if you can call the Scottish summer, you know, good weather, but there's more to it than that, and there's more things happen during the summer. People want to do things during the summer, whether it be hang about with their families at the weekend, whether it be because that's what they've done, you know, for the past 30 years, or, you know, just because the good weather, again, would bring up competition for other things, you know, so changing it, whether it be league reconstruction or moving to a summer league, I don't know, something has to change, but I don't know what to be honest with you.
In that regard, I'm quite a traditionalist as well. I like the Christmas fixtures and things like that. It's become a yearly routine almost. It's just something that you kind of associate with the festive period that you'll get out to two or three games over that time, and it breaks things up. And I think I would miss stuff like that. But at the same time, I think to a certain extent, supporters need to be willing to change as well, change their habits and that sort of thing, just so they'll. If the game's going to change itself, then the supporters will need to adapt one way or another, whether it be during the summer holidays taking their kids to the games, or it could just backfire, as you kind of indicated there as well, that the supporters could vote with their feet. But until you're willing to actually try something like that, you're never going to know what the end result's going to be.
Again, I agree with you. Like yourself, I enjoy, you know, winter football, if you want, is granted, you know, there might be the one or two odd call-offs. Because how many call-offs have we had this year?
The Commander game was the only one that was off, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, so it's and when was that originally scheduled for? Was that January?
Yeah, I think you're right. It was mainly due to structural damage in the stadium rather than actual.
That's right. Yeah, again, obviously the weather played a bit of a part in that, as far as I'm aware. But you know, it's not as if, you know, for example, the rain nearly put the game off there again. You know, it's how many. This time last year, or, you know, later in March last year, I think, you know, it was 25 degrees at one point, and then come, you know, July, whatever, it was raining again. So, you know, it's a bit hard to, it's obviously very hard to predict the weather, but it's, like yourself, I'm a bit of a traditionalist, and I prefer having the, you know, the winter nights. So although it's cold, don't get me wrong, as long as you wrap up, you're fine. But how would that then play when you have to take a month off because the World Cup's on, the European Championship's on? You know, every second year that's going to happen, so I don't even know how you would even end up playing in summer. You know, I know that Russia, I think it was, played an 18-month-long season to come out of the winter period and join up with the rest of, you know, the bigger leagues in Europe and play over the summer, effectively. But, you know, they played a season over 18 months, so is that what you'd have to do in order to end up in a winter league scenario, a summer league scenario?
Can you imagine being in a mid-table battle and playing over a season at 18 months?
Just having no, a I was going to say, I think if summer football was ever going to happen, then you're probably looking at the World Cup in Qatar as a good excuse for it to happen. You know, you can kind of structure your season, use that as a reason to kind of finish or start your season early or late, and sort of build your season around the fact that they're going to be playing a World Cup in November or December. But if it doesn't happen around then I don't think it will happen. And to be honest, it seems to be like a big for and a big against camp. I couldn't care less. It just really doesn't bother me in the slightest. I quite like going and getting my pie and Bovril when it's freezing. I quite like going in my shorts or that when it's sunny. It doesn't bother me in the slightest.
I'm kind of one of these ones as well. If they changed it this summer, I would just go along with it. I'd be willing to give it a shot. I think what we all can agree on is certainly something needs to change. What that is, we've all got different viewpoints on, but it's what they can't do is just accept that everything's all right because people still go to the football, because it's far from it.
Well, as I said when Andrew Wilson was on, I think that what needs to change is a big list of things. I think there needs to be a proper attempt to revamp the entire matchday experience. The whole idea of, you know, I understand Flo quite fancies summer football. I know that, you know, a few folk quite fancy having a pint at the football. It doesn't really make any difference if there's just folk hitting out with one idea here, one idea there. There needs to be a proper sit down and look at, right, here's what the matchday experience is currently like for your average football fan. It's not acceptable. It's not good enough. Here's what we want it to be like, and move towards that, and then have a lot of aspects to that change, rather than, you know, one, you know, summer football is going to change everything, or this is going to change everything. Everything needs to change. Prices need to be cheaper. There needs to be safe standing. You should be allowed to have a pint at the game if you want to. You know, if summer football is a part of it, then great. But there's a lot of changes to be made, other than just, you know, the one or two ideas that occasionally get a bit of space in newspapers and on websites.
Yeah, the World Cup thing's a wee bit of a cop out as well, given that we've not been to a major championship since France 98. You can only kind of, yes, hopefully under Strachan we will qualify for the Euros, but Come on, we've had that long to change it, and it's been quite clear in many of these qualifying campaigns that we had absolutely bugger all chance of getting through.
Sorry, that's fair enough as well, but it's not even, that's not even just Scotland that covers, because can you imagine, you know, Celtic had signed a Belgian, you know, a decent Belgian player who had made it into the Belgian squad, but he was running riot here in Scotland. You know, there's not a chance that Celtic would play a game with him at the World Cup. They would say, no, we're not playing our games. The same way when they went a jolly out to the United States during the winter, they'd be like, no, we're not playing.
But they do it anyway. They just go away and they'll play their friendlies. They were in their training camp in Gran Canaria, I think it was, at the start of the year. They do what
that's what I'm saying.
They do what they like most of the time. So why do we, for 2 or 3 weeks of the World Cup, or 4 weeks maximum, they'd be without one or two players. In that case, reschedule the games, but you'll have more, you'll certainly have better weather to be able to reschedule these games rather than having to fit them in midweek nights in February and in January when it's freezing cold and there's every possibility that it might need to be put off again.
But what the point there is, if you reschedule, well, come these World Cups and Euros are going to be on anyway, so they're going to know, and whether or not they take time off or whatever, they're going to have to put the, in my opinion, they would make the season start slightly earlier and finish slightly earlier. Now, again, so if you take that month, 2 or 3 weeks off, whatever it is, you have to slide it either way, I think. And again, can you imagine, for example, in our scenario, the new, where it's November, you know, it could be snowing, it could be raining very heavily, and we've got a relegation battle. You know, I mean, fair dues, it's all right saying still the same relegation battle when it's sunny in May, or when it's released better weather in May, hopefully. But you know, if there's 3 inches of snow lying there in the middle of November, and you've got a game against St Mirren, you know, it's not going to be a pretty affair anyway. Well, it actually wouldn't be a pretty affair anyway, last game of the season against St Mirren for survival. But you know what I'm getting at. Basically, the weather's going to play an end at that part of it as well. Could be, you know, if you're doing well and, you know, you're trying to qualify for Europe or, you know, win the league, if you're Celtic or whoever else is up there at that point, you know. So it's swings and roundabouts, really. It's a bit like yourselves. I'm not really too fussed, but I just don't think there's any point in changing it.
That's fair enough. I think that's basically all we've got time for this week. Anyway, all being well, we'll have 2 episodes of the podcast next week. We will reveal more than that on social media in the next few days, certainly. Jay, thanks very much for your time, mate.
Cheers, as always.
Buster, thank you very much.
No bother, thanks very much, guys.
You've been listening to the By The Min MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you.